You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found at the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Jennifer Rock and Michael Voss, authors of Operation Cluster Puck, a BS Incorporated novel. Jennifer and Michael, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being on there. So I gotta admit, I read this book, and I don't normally read fiction, so this was interesting to me with the different characters and stuff, but I found myself laughing out loud with a lot of stuff that you had going on. So congrats on writing an awesome book in that regard.
Thank you. We always appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, how long did it take to write this thing?
So this is our second novel, and this one took us about 9 months to write. However, our first book took us about 6 years to get from the idea stage through to having a printed book in our hands. So the second one came out a lot faster.
Nice. Okay. Well, I suppose it's just like anything, right? Remind me of the title of your first book. Is it BS Incorporated?
That is correct. The first one was BS Incorporated, and so this is the sequel.
Nice. Now, it looks like just from reading the back, you guys have a business, a communications business, essentially on your own outside of the book. Is that correct?
We do. Jennifer and I have been lifelong communications professionals, and we crossed paths working at Best Buy headquarters, which is here in the Minneapolis area.
Oh, sure.
We worked there together for about 12 years. And we started working on the novel while we were still there. And at one point in 2014, we decided to leave our jobs, finish our novel, and start a communications consulting firm.
That is awesome. So you skipped ahead of a lot of stuff there. Some of the stuff just got me curious. One of them is the whole partnership thing. I've had business partners, good and bad, in the past, and I cannot even imagine writing a book with another person. So can you just tell me about how that process came about and whose idea it was and how, like, just the whole, how does it happen?
Sure. Well, you know, as like most great ideas, this started over a whole bunch of cocktails.
Nice.
We had a very long 4-hour kind of soul-sucking meeting, one of those typical corporate meetings where nothing was being productive. We escaped. We went to a bar patio. It was warm outside. We had some cocktails. We started swapping stories and said, you know, one day we will get out of this place and one day we should write a book. And we realized that both of us had kept a lot of notes of the crazy things that happened over our careers and the people that we knew and the interesting conversations. And really it was a mutual decision that, you know, we're going to pinky swear this thing. And after we sober up and put a plan down on paper, we're going to write this book. And, you know, it was really book first, communications agency second, if you will, because both of us separately had always had a dream to write and publish a book. And I'll be honest, I mean, the first one wasn't easy to figure out the writing process, to figure out how we were going to do this in a way that sounded like one person wrote this book.
Sure.
This is really a journey.
Sure. So was it challenging? Because you have a lot of dialogue with a lot of different characters. So I imagine each of you probably had some input into all that. And to cooperate or to say this person would say this or this is how they would say it, there had to be some challenges there.
Yeah, there definitely were challenges. And I think in that respect, our business backgrounds really came in handy for us, James. And, you know, as you know, a lot of work goes into creating a strategic plan for a business. And we essentially created a strategic plan for the creation of this book. We fleshed out the characters. We fleshed out the story arcs. We gave the characters backstories and talked about what their dialogue would sound like and all those kinds of things. So then when we divvied up the writing responsibilities, there were really no surprises, except in a good way, when one of us would write something funny that would make the other person laugh or just come up with a really good idea that the other person wouldn't have thought of. And again, it was a long process, and we definitely had some hiccups along the way, but that planning aspect of it up front served us really well in writing a book, just as it does for people who are running a business.
Sure. So when you the first book taking 6 years, was that mostly just getting stuff on paper, the ideas hammered out, or why was that one so much longer than the second one?
Yeah, well, you know, we were, as Mike said, working at Best Buy headquarters, and mm-hmm. we were running the employee communications team. And so at the time, Best Buy had about 165,000 employees across the world, and we were working directly with the CEO.
All right.
And I come from a Wisconsin hometown that has about 25,000 people in it.
Okay,
so
sure.
This company, right? This company was massive, right? So we had very big jobs at a very big company, and they were demanding, and they were 24/7, and I slept with my phone in my hand. I'm waiting for the crisis to happen at 3 a.m.
Sure.
And so just having time to squeeze in writing a book was mm-hmm. challenging.
Sure.
You do it at meetings, you do it sometimes on the evening, sometimes a little bit on the weekend or on a flight or something. So there was definitely a time factor. But also, I'll be honest, you know, we had spent our careers writing for business,
mm-hmm.
writing memos, writing pitches, writing, you know, basically company journalist kind of things. We didn't know how to write fiction. That was a whole process in and of itself.
Sure.
How you actually write a novel with a compelling storyline and interesting characters that you want to get to know. So that was a little hit and miss until we hit a groove.
So you raise an interesting point. What made you guys select to do fiction versus nonfiction, or a how-to or a how-to-survive book or something of that nature?
That's a great question, and we discussed it. We discussed whether we should do something that's a little more fact-based and based on our experiences and the lessons we learned along the way. And I think part of it just stems from us originally wanting to be novelists since we were young kids and before we ever met each other, and you want to tell stories. But then we also realized that, you know, people really engage well with stories, and while, you know, there are terrific nonfiction books out there that will teach you lessons, you can also glean a lot of lessons and a lot of themes from a fictional story. And we definitely tried to put those kinds of things into our books as well, so people could take away some deeper themes beyond just some entertainment and some humor, which is an important part of it as well. But we really wanted to delve deeply into some of those themes and use actual characters to flesh those things out.
Sure.
Basically, we didn't want people to fall asleep while they were reading the book.
Oh, no. I feel bad because I wrote a nonfiction book, so no worries.
Way to go, Jennifer.
Sorry.
No, I promise you, if you fall asleep reading my book, well, I don't know. I guess you needed a nap, so it's all good. No, I totally understand the fiction thing. One of the things that I really liked about your book is the variety of characters that you have. And I can say it myself, I've never worked in an office environment in a large company. I've worked for big corporations, but I was always bottom level minion kind of thing, where I didn't see all the politics going on. So how did you come up with all the different characters?
Sure. You know, while our books, like Operation Clusterpuck, are not a completely, you know, real life book by any means, there's a healthy amount of fiction. They're certainly, they are based loosely on some characters we've known in real life.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, it's like anything where, you know, you need a good villain, you need protagonists and antagonists, and, you know, like any movie plot, you know, you need both James Bond and you need, you know, the villain, you need Goldfinger or something, you know,
sure.
as the villain. And so, this was just putting together basically the right cast of characters
mm-hmm.
that could play off of each other, that could carry the kind of the villainous plot, but also be the heroes or the anti-heroes. And really at the core of it, we wanted a team of middle managers that you wished you worked with. There's people that you wished you could go have a beer with after work.
Sure.
And they would tell you great stories and you could commiserate with them. And even if you don't have that in your real job, we wanted you to feel the fictional sense of that. Like, I have a team who has my back. And so that's really what we set out to create with those characters.
Sure. Very cool. So since a lot of these are loosely based on people or maybe personality types that you've worked with, did you keep it a secret that you were writing this book or even the first one over the course of time to prevent upsetting anyone that maybe recognized themselves in there?
We did keep it under wraps for several years, in part because we knew it would be a long road to getting it published. And,
sure.
And the last thing we wanted to do was continually answer questions. When's the book going to be done? but once we went out there with it, we really enjoyed the speculation among our friends and former colleagues when they were guessing, oh, this character is based on so-and-so. And
sure.
I know exactly who Lyle Kirkland is based on and things like that. So that was just a lot of fun to have our friends maybe see a little bit of themselves in it, see a little bit of people that they worked with in it. And then, of course, we always just use a dose of our own imagination as well.
Sure, sure. So when these books were published, were you guys still working at the corporate gig, or did you leave before this ever hit the stores?
We left. We had already quit our corporate jobs and were building our own business by the time the first book came out. And I think there's some goodness in that. You know, I always say that time and distance are great. You know, reveals a lot of truth. So it's a lot easier to look back on a job that you had and be able to provide some commentary on it and fictionalize it.
Sure.
I think it might have been a lot harder for us, like while we were in the throes of some of the chaos that was going on in the real company we were working for. So, and plus, you know, we just really didn't want to get sued. So
yeah, it saved a couple of meetings at the HR office, I suppose. So that's cool.
Yeah, we could see that in our future and went, yeah, maybe we should be out of here before we published it.
So let's, I want to talk a little bit more about the book before we shift into the whole business thing that you got going on. Who did you go through for a publisher, and how did you choose them, or did they choose you?
So, great question. So we started pursuing the traditional publishing route, in which you need to find a literary agent, and then they take your work to one of the big publishers, usually out of New York or Los Angeles.
Sure.
And that's a really difficult road to go down, and we got rejected many times. There was interest on many occasions, but it just never came to fruition. And we ultimately found a publisher right here in Minneapolis, kind of right under our noses after years and years of attempts, and that publisher is called Wise Ink Publishing. And they've just been a great partner for us, and they're kind of a blend between the traditional publishing route I mentioned and self-publishing, in which you get a lot of the support that you would get from the big publishing houses, but they don't take a cut of your proceeds.
Sure. Well, that works out pretty well. Yeah, it's interesting because I tried to go down the traditional route, not knowing much about the self-publishing route. And I thought, this is a pain in the butt and very slow. I'm just going to learn about the self-publishing route. And I ended up going that way, yeah, because it's 2019. I guess back then it was 2018, and it's cool. It's very cool. Congrats on that.
These days, yeah.
Awesome. So
thank you.
Are you guys available? Or not you guys. Is the book available all over the world kind of thing, or is it mostly domestic or, I guess, online only in stores? How have you navigated that?
Yes. So, you know, a lot of help from, again, our publisher and the distribution system. And, you know, we are big believers, both on the book side of what we do and on the business side, is that you surround yourself with very smart people and experts who can help guide you through the process.
Sure.
So we both have, you know, paperbacks as well as ebooks available certainly all over the world. It's awfully fun to do, you know, radio shows from Barcelona or, you know, New Zealand and things like that, and realize that we all have the same, you know, issues with the workplace.
Doesn't
matter
yeah.
where you are in the world. That's always fun for us. And, you know, to know that whether you're in, you know, Brussels or Boston, you're still thrilled when there's free food in the break room. You know, that's
sure.
just a universal truth.
Right.
So all of that's very good. But in terms of distribution, you know, there are certain non-negotiables that you have to do when you publish a book. So you have to be on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, because, you know, people have Nooks and they have Kindles. And so mm-hmm. you have to have, you know, the distribution to be able to basically get your book in the hands of however anybody wants a book. So, yes, we are certainly in all those distribution channels, both electronic and paperback, and online is a miracle. I mean, that's really how you get the books out there and you get those in people's hands.
Sure. What has worked for you guys in regards to marketing the book?
Well, you're looking at it, James. These radio interviews and podcast interviews have really, really been great for us. We also do a fair amount of social media across Twitter and Facebook and Instagram primarily. And, you know, we've done some book signing events at some local bookstores here in the Twin Cities area and in St. Cloud as well. So we've done kind of a mix and a blend. And the first book was really a learning experience for us.
Sure.
And now we're really kind of dialing in much more on radio and podcast interviews that are a great way to reach a business audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also helping us develop a network of smart people like you that we now can, you know, reach back out to and refer business to or get referrals from as well. So that's really been our primary marketing tool.
Sure. Sure. Very cool. Now, this book came out, was it November of last year?
Yes, Operation Cluster Puck came out in November.
Okay, so we're talking four and a half, five months, give or take?
Give or take, yep.
Give or take. So in that regard, has the book sold as many as you were hoping for? Or I guess what have been your results in that regard?
Yeah, you know, the beautiful thing about putting out a book is that it's actually considered new for 2 years. So we are just an infant in the book process, and
sure,
we'll continue to do marketing and interviews and publicity. Really, for the, you know, we're in it for the long haul, so we'll be at this at least 2 years for Operation Cluster Puck.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's fun to find a footing in the audience. You know, we have got the benefit this time around of having people who read the first book and wanted to see what happens to the characters in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you don't need to read the first book to understand what's going on in Operation Cluster Puck. So the benefit there is that we're, you know, reaching out to new audiences as well. And that is so much fun to get people to, you know, get to know these characters and then maybe reach back and read the first one and figure out the origins of this company and where characters like Will and Anna came from.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It's interesting because I guess I was reading this book and I didn't realize that you guys had another book that was the prequel, so to speak, to this one until, you know, I don't even know how, if I was doing some research on you guys or what I found out, but it was interesting because I started the book, you sat down and you read and it kept my interest for a very long time, so that's awesome. Let's see here.
Thank you.
Yeah, that leads to the next question, though. Do you have another book in progress?
We do not have one in progress yet, but we definitely plan to write another book. The question that we have yet to answer for ourselves is whether we do a third book in this BS Incorporated series,
mm-hmm,
or if we branch out and write something a little bit different with a new set of characters and a new backdrop.
Sure.
And what we're really looking for is to have our readers tell us, is there an appetite for these characters in this story to continue, or do they just enjoy the gentle tone and humor and heartfelt aspects of the book, and that we could branch out and write something else they would appreciate just as much?
Sure. One of the things that I want, this is just a curiosity question, so you can totally tell me James is a stupid question, let's move on. But you guys you've been out of the corporate world for, what are we talking, 7, 8 years, something like that?
Oh, about seven. Almost seven.
Okay, so 7 years. So have you, and you've been on your own, like you've had your own business for roughly 7 years, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So do you feel like you've lost touch with some of that corporate stuff and you've learned some of the headaches of the small business world, so to speak? Or are you still, because what you're selling, I'm guessing, is to mostly corporate industries or corporate businesses, that you still kind of have a pulse on that and how they act and yep, the issues, I guess, that yeah, they come across?
That's a great question. And first I'd say that we have not exhausted all of the stories that we originally had from
I don't know. That's awesome. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I mean, for us it's good because at least we have a place to tell those and put those. But yeah, we have a ton of more stories that we certainly could tell from that original experience. But,
sure.
But you're right. I mean, we still work for big corporations. We still work for, you know, we've done about a year and a half gig at the largest privately held company in the world. that happens to be based here in Minnesota. And again, you know, that's where some of the in Operation Clusterpuck, there's a lot about technology and dealing with IT and dealing with issues with technology. And that came from new clients and new experiences. So
sure.
The inspiration certainly is with some of the startups and the small companies that we continue to work for. And also, you know, we're proud to say that we keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on in big corporations, too, by doing very regular happy hours with people who still work in that world. And, you know, it's a tough job, but somebody has to do it, you know.
That is an awesome way to do research.
Two for one half. Right? I would like to say that that's a write-off. I'm not sure it is. But, you know, again, somebody has to do the tough job of sitting outside on a sunny patio on a beautiful day with a cocktail in her hand and listening
sure.
to other people's stories and taking notes.
Sure. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the IT thing because, oh, my gosh, did you hit that nail on the head so hard. Yeah. Congrats on that. That was awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. That's another one of those universal experiences, right?
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy how that's a standard. Just people that have never met each other and they're all terrible IT people. I don't get it. I don't understand. Maybe it's a prerequisite to get hired or they test it when they do the Microsoft thing. I'm not sure. Whatever it is, you certainly nailed that. I don't know if that's good or bad, though, right? Like, there has to be some good IT
right.
people somewhere, right? Presumably somewhere.
Right.
Let's talk about the editing of the book, because I imagine, did the publisher help you with that, or is that something you guys took care of on your own, or how did that work?
Yeah, that was another learning experience for us. There are several rounds of editing that take place. So we first got through our publisher what's called the developmental edit, and that's a more of a high-level set of recommendations around you should develop this character more, or you should get rid of this character that doesn't add any value, things of that nature.
Sure.
And then there's a true copy edit, a page-by-page, more of a diving into sentence structure and things of that nature that are, you know, maybe could be improved, or this part isn't as clear, or the story bogs down in this part. And then there's finally a proofread as well, which is what people tend to think of in terms of editing, and that's the misplaced period or a missing quotation mark and those kinds of things. So it was really a pretty substantial editing process in three phases.
Sure. That's interesting that you say that. Because I totally found the same thing when I was writing my books. I remember reaching out to an editor, and they're like, what kind of edit do you want? And I thought, what do you mean, what kind of edit do I want? And they're like, you want content or grammar? And I said, yeah, just both, right? Because I imagine if you see a comma misplaced,
yeah.
when you're looking at content, you could totally tell me about it. Like, don't hide it or anything. So it was
right.
interesting because I ended up using three editors, and all three of them called it a hybrid edit. Like, I don't know what that means, but the book, yeah, it was weird because I imagine with typical publishers, they must have some sequence of events that they go through with different editors and all that jazz. So, and that was nonfiction. I can imagine that fiction is even tougher because you have characters that you're talking about where maybe people would say, hey, that character changed their personality or whatever mid-story or something like this, or would they really see that? So that's adding a layer of complexity that I didn't even realize. Holy cow. Good for you guys. Was that a challenge at all?
Well, thank you. And, you know, it's like with anything, you know, whether you're hiring an accountant for your business or whether you're hiring an editor for your book, you have to have a level of trust. So when you turn over your QuickBooks to an accountant or you're turning over your manuscript to an editor,
mm-hmm.
The challenge is basically just taking a little step back and saying, I trust this person to do the right thing for me, and they understand the vision and what we're going for here. And there were some tough things. I mean, you know, in the first book, it was tough to hear this character that we really loved didn't add anything to the story, and we needed to basically kill him.
Oh, no.
And remove him from the book, and that was tough. I mean, that was a tough thing. Now, we did, you know, revise him a little bit and resurrect him in Operation Clusterpuck, so we felt a little vindication there.
Sure.
But also, like, there's a beautiful thing, though, when you work with an editor who knows and loves your characters as much as you do. And Frank, our editor for Operation Clusterpuck, you know, there would be parts where he would say, I don't think this is consistent with what Anna has learned over the course of your books. I think she's more thinking this.
Sure.
And I would think, holy cow, you know, this character is partially based on me, and he knows this character better than I do. That's crazy.
Nice. That's awesome. That's a sharp editor, so that's cool. Let's talk about, let's shift into, let me back up one step, because I had one more question about your books here. The Operation Clusterpuck, was that in process when you published the first one, the BS Incorporated? Or was did that come out after BS Incorporated was published, and you're like, hey, this book thing, we should do that again?
That definitely came out afterward. As we were finishing up the first novel, our editor encouraged us to leave a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of that story. She said, just in case you decide to come back and revisit these characters. And we heard so much from our readers that they had to know what happened next, what was going to happen with Anna's ex, who got introduced basically at the very end of the book, and things of that nature. So it was, again, the whole lesson of surrounding yourself with smart people and taking their advice. That's really what launched us into doing a sequel. We weren't sure at the time that there even was a second book here until we dropped that cliffhanger in at the end and heard from our readers that said, when's the next one coming out? I need to know what happens.
Sure. So I imagine 6 years into writing that book, did you feel like, oh, let's never do that again? Or did you feel like, you know what? I want to make this my life.
Oh, well, but great question. And I'd say that that is the beauty of having a co-author, is that on the days that I would say, I am never doing this again, Mike would say, no, of course we're going to do this again. Like, this is awesome. This has been a dream that each of us has had. And then vice versa. You know, we try not to both have those bad days.
Not the same time. Sure.
Right.
Exactly.
Awesome. And then how did you, how do I want to say this? When you guys worked with each other and you're coming up with the characters, did you intentionally spin yourselves into certain characters, or was there some feedback between the two of you saying, oh, Mike, you're like this, or oh, Jennifer, you're like this?
Yeah, we definitely started out knowing that we wanted to tell the story from two perspectives, a male protagonist and a female protagonist. And of course, your best writing is going to be when you write about things that you know. So we wanted to draw upon our own personal experiences. And what we realized is that we both approached our careers very differently. I was someone who just really went with the flow. Whatever the company asked me to do, I would do it. Whatever new assignment or new role I was put into, I would just happily take it and go. And I didn't really plan for anything, and I was fortunate I still advanced in my career without having to sit down and plan for it. Jennifer was very different. She planned, she had goals set on what titles she would hold and how much money she would make and what kind of company she would be working on or working at in various stages of her career. And we thought that was an interesting perspective, because there are people in both camps and probably people even in between that who view their careers even in different ways. So we started with that as a premise, that Will, the character based loosely on me, would be a company lifer who's been there forever and didn't really have a plan for where to go with his career. And Anna, in the first book, we liked the idea of dropping her fresh into the company as a new person in this huge, fast-paced organization, because that's another experience that a lot of people have. When you jump into a new job, everyone's speaking a different language. You don't understand the acronyms. You don't have any of the historical perspective from being in the company. So we really try to provide our readers with different views of what life is like in the corporate world for different people.
Sure, sure. So that's interesting. One interesting thing that I also noticed, now that you say that Will and Anna have a lot of you guys respectively in their place, the two of them had a romantic interest in each other. Not the spoiler alert there, right? Was that a challenge between the two of you working together on this book and Michael saying, hey, let's fire into this dating thing, whatever. And I can imagine, this is just me speaking from a man. I was just like, let's do this right in there. And then I can imagine Jennifer or any other woman saying, pump the brakes there, tough guy. This is not how it would work in real life.
Well, that's a fabulous question. And first of all, Will and Anna are loosely based on the two of us. the romantic relationship is pure fiction. That was something and we didn't even have an inkling of in the first book to begin with. And they said, yeah, your readers are going to want at least a little bit of a love interest between these two. So that's where the fiction came in.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we the two of us are not romantic comedy writers, and we wanted this to be a business book and a thriller and all the good things that Operation Clusterpuck could be with its plot. We didn't set out to write a romantic novel, and it's not. But to be real with the relationships between the characters, and especially between Will and Anna, you know, we had to draw on relationships that we have both separately had. We had to rely on our editors to kind of make that a reality, you know, in the book. And there was a point, you know, actually this is in the first book, where, you know, I had written a scene, again, this is the beauty of having a co-author, I had written a scene where Will was talking with his ex-girlfriend and trying to get some closure with her. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the scene and I was really proud of it. And Mike read it and said, yeah, no, that's not how this would go.
That's
and he just
awesome.
Put the whole thing aside and wrote it again and wrote it again from Will's perspective. And I'm like, yeah, see, this is why I need a guy's perspective, especially
sure.
when we're talking about kind of the romance between these characters.
And I would just add too, James, and it was even more important the other way in terms of Jennifer bringing a woman's perspective to life in the workplace. And I think there's much more of that where I had a blind spot than anything where Jennifer had a blind spot about the man's perspective. To your point about, you know, whoa there, pump the brakes, big guy. We had a scene that I had written that Anna had a really tough first day on the job, and she had been wearing this crisp white blouse, and she went to her car in the parking lot and broke down in tears. And the way I had written the story was that she, you know, used the crook of her elbow to wipe her tears. And Jennifer said, no woman in her right mind would ever risk getting mascara on that white blouse.
Sure.
So she rewrote that scene and several others that really offered a perspective that I would have never had.
That's awesome. That is awesome. There's something we said about having partnerships in that regard, because they can help you keep it honest or keep it real as much as you can. So that is totally cool. So well played that way. Let's shift into the business that you got going on. This is a communications company that essentially stemmed from the same way, if I'm not mistaken, the same way that the book came about, right? You guys worked together and you said, hey, we're awesome at this. Let's go do it somewhere else on our own. Stop making other people rich, kind of thing.
You should be writing our marketing copy. That was awesome. That's exactly what we did. You know, I mean, again, you know, between the two of us, we've got 45 years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it sounds so long when you say that out loud, but between the two of us, we do have 45 years of experience helping executives and companies communicate better with their audiences. So whether that be their employees or their communities or their shareholders. And we were very good at it for a very long time in the corporate world. And yeah, we got to a point in our careers where we said, let's give this a shot and do this on our own. And the beauty of that is that we can choose the companies that we work with and the types of industries, and we get to jump in and out of companies and learn a ton about the industry they work in and
mm-hmm.
with the leaders and help them better at telling their company stories and talking with employees and getting employees informed and inspired. And so that's really what our goal is with our communications agency.
Sure. So which came first? Was it the writing the book, or was it the business, or did one lead to the other? How did that work?
The book came first. So when we left our jobs at Best Buy, and by the way, I should point out that we enjoyed our time there, but it was just time for us to go. And so we first just focused on finishing the book, and we were fortunate that in a big company like that, you build a lot of relationships with people who go on to do other things and people who have seen the good work that you can do. And while we were finishing the first book, a former senior executive from Best Buy who had gone on to another organization reached out to us and said, hey, we could use some help in the communications arena. Would you be willing to do some work for us on a consulting basis? And we said, yeah, well, let's do it. That sounds like fun. And so we're really very fortunate. We didn't have much of a plan to start a business. But we were approached to do some work, and it was great fun and well received. And we said, you know, we can do both of these things. We can write and publish and promote our books, and we can do some consulting and help some companies that need help.
Nice. And was that when that executive reached out to you, was it reaching out to one of you specifically, or they assumed that the both of you were together? How did that work?
Yeah, he had actually reached out to me and just asked me if I could help. And I, it's funny because I remember the story. I was still in bed. It was very early one morning, and he texted me, and I quickly, before I responded, texted Jennifer and said, "Hey, would you want to do this together?" And then I went back to him and said, "Yeah, how about if we both do it? Because that way you get the benefits of two brains instead of just one." And we scrambled to set up an LLC and do all the things we needed to do to actually operate as a business. But it was one of the best things that ever happened to us, one of the best decisions we made.
Nice. Were you guys working at the time, or was this kind of the downtime between where you were working before at Best Buy and then whatever was going to be next?
Yeah, this is actually in that downtime, if you could call it that. You know, we were finishing up the book and working to get that published. And again, as Mike said, we were, you know, fortunate to have these great jobs at Best Buy headquarters, and it really was time to leave. And when we left, we both received severance packages, so we had a little cushion in between there.
Sure.
To finish the book, and it was one of those moments of like, if not now, when? You know,
right.
We're basically getting paid to be on a sabbatical, and we said we're going to finish the book, we're going to see this one through, and then we'll see what happens. So. I know it's very rare that you start a business or you even think about starting a business and your first client falls in your lap. And for anybody who's listening, that's not normal. And it's not that easy all the time. And it certainly has not been that easy since. Like, clients
Sure.
don't just tend to fall into our lap every day. That was just the one that gave us the confidence to say, yeah, I think we can do this. And then the hard work begins to actually set up the business and figure out what you're going to do.
So was there a conversation between the two of you at this point when Michael, you got reached out to and said, "Hey, I got this gig," or you're like, "Hey, let's just do this a one-time thing," versus let's do this, let's start a business?
You know, I think the idea to actually turn it into a business came as the work with that first client unfolded. Initially, we said, "Sure, we'll put a little extra money in our pocket," and then we realized, "Well, gosh, we've gone through the work to set up and." LLC, you know, a limited liability company, and mm-hmm. and actually establish a name for the company and things like that. And again, it was so much fun that we said, gosh, let's do this. And that way we're not putting all of our chips into the book. You know, we're sort of hedging our bets here that we make some income with the business while we wait for the book income to materialize.
Sure.
So it came about slowly, I guess, from my perspective. Jennifer, I don't know if you feel differently.
Yeah, you know, I think just to add to that, I mean, it just kind of fell into our lap, and it was just kind of a funny thing. But I do remember the conversation. It was on the flight on the way back to Minneapolis because this client happened to be in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We were coming back after a few days with this client, and we were sitting next to each other on the plane, and we said, you know, what would this look like if we actually did this full time? Like, how long can we give this a shot? How long before we can say we're successful at this, or like, ooh, we tried this, now we have to go get real jobs again?
Sure.
And so we did talk about that on the flight back from this first client, but you know, here we are, really 5 years later. And you know, having made a go at having our own business and being entrepreneurs, and again, I feel really fortunate because that's not the success story a lot of people have. It's tough out there. It's tough to do your own business development. It's tough to find clients, and you know, out here we don't have the benefit of a $45 billion company behind us. We don't have a finance department to go to. We don't have a sales team out there pounding the bricks for us. It's just the two of us.
Sure. So how do you get clients for a business like that? Because I imagine that's a bigger ticket, I guess, as far as that goes. So it's not just something you can throw up a lemonade stand and say, "I got this." So I imagine that there has to be some conversations with people, and there's a trust factor as well, since what you're doing is pretty important. Communication is a huge deal in business. So how do you market it?
Again, that was another piece that we really had to figure out. And for us, the biggest the biggest and most effective marketing tool we had was just leveraging our network, having coffee with people, letting people know that we're out there and this is what we're doing now. Again, we were fortunate to work for such a big company where people move on and go to other places and they've had an opportunity to see our work. So the vast majority of our clients have come from our extended network of people that we worked with at Best Buy, people we knew that from jobs prior to working at Best Buy, friends of friends that we've worked with who could recommend us. I think we have one client that came in through LinkedIn, just a random client that didn't know us at all and was just poking around looking for communications experts on LinkedIn. And we've had a couple of other, you know, random ways that business has come our way. But really, it's the power of the network is the single biggest lever that we've had to pull.
Sure. That's awesome. That's awesome. So 5 years, that's super cool. You made over the hurdle, the 1 year, the 2 year, and the 5 year hurdles. Those are big deals. So congrats on that.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it feels good to reach that 5 year mark and say, hey, maybe we can actually make a go with this.
Well, hopefully by now it's all good. So there's no question. And that you're making money and enjoying it. I guess both. If it's your own business, you better enjoy it.
Yeah, because, you know, that's another fallacy of owning your own business, right? It's like, oh, we're going to have so much free time and, you know, I don't have to work 24/7 anymore. Like, I'm not, you know, working for the man. I'm working for myself.
And right.
You know, but this is hard work. I mean, you think about this all the time because, again, you know, it's you. And if it's just you, and if you are not actively working on a client, you are not making money. You know,
mm-hmm.
you need the billable hours when you're in a service industry. And so it's definitely a shift in thinking. But, you know, when we are at our best and our client roster is full, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade it back for the corporate experience because it's a really wonderful and special thing, like you said, to do something that you're good at and to do something that you love, you know, you really love. And when it pays the rent, I mean, that's just the gravy on top.
Sure. Right. That's fair. That's totally fair. It's interesting that you mentioned the word freedom because I hear a lot of small business owners use that exact term when they talk about building their business. And I have a business planning class. And it's interesting when you talk about people that are like, oh, I'm doing this for the freedom. And then they're putting something together like they want this retail store, but they don't want employees, and they're going to be open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Oh,
or something
wow.
like that. Like, you are just building your own prison. That is not freedom. That's the opposite of freedom. So from you guys owning your own business, the small business that you got going on, making it to 5 years, and then having worked in the corporate world and all that jazz, just comparing those two, do you have a preference?
You know, I think there are advantages to both. You know, the biggest advantage to me in the corporate world is that steady paycheck. And that's
mm-hmm.
always going to be the toughest thing alone in your own business, right?
Sure.
You are responsible for finding work and paying yourself. But I definitely have the preference of owning our own small business, even with the challenges that comes with sort of keeping the money flowing in and continually finding clients and finding work. There is, if not the straight up freedom of more time, there is the freedom to, at least for us in a professional services business, that we can schedule our time, you know, in certain ways. So, for example, I typically don't take meetings in the morning because I'm dropping my kids off at school. And that's
sure.
something I wasn't able to do with my previous job. And that's a, you know, that's a big thing in my life. That's extra time I get to spend with my two sons. So those are the kinds of things I wouldn't trade for the world that I didn't have in the corporate job before. And again, not that one is just light years better than the other. It's really what you're wired for, what you want to do, what you want to look back on and say, I made the right choice for myself.
Sure. What has been some of the feedback that you've gotten from colleagues now that they know that you're on your own? Have there been some people that looked down on you because you have a small business or looked up to you because you went on your own?
You know, we are so lucky to have colleagues who are wonderfully supportive, and those who have gone off and, you know, done their own small businesses or gone back to school. I mean, we all tend to support each other in this extended network because we know it's tough out there. So everybody has been so gracious with their learnings and their experience and their advice, and we try to pay that back, of course, or pay that forward. But yeah, people have been incredibly supportive, and you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I keep track of all these people who have gone off and done things on their own. And, you know, we are two of a very few that are still left who haven't gone back into a corporate job. And,
oh, sure.
And there's no shame in that. Oh, my goodness. Goodness. I mean, again, it's tough out here. So, and I respect that, you know, if you decide that, no, I want the security and the steadiness and that foundation of a corporate job, you go for it. But, mm-hmm. you know, there's a certain amount of pride attached to the fact that, that 5 years later, you know, we're still out here and making it. And so, yeah, I think former colleagues have been really supportive, and I think they are, I just think that there's a certain amount of like, wow, you know, you guys are still making it. So, you know, hey, if we can serve as some sort of inspiration to somebody, that's awesome.
Sure.
Because in the beginning, I think people just kind of thought we were nuts.
That's fair. That's totally fair. So one of the other questions that I had for you, since you guys wrote a book together, you wrote a couple books together, I should say, and you've gone through the publishing, editing, all that jazz. You have this business that you've had for 5 years. Do you guys ever get sick of each other?
We definitely have our days. I think just as any other partners would. But the great thing is we decided to write the book together and start a business together because we have such respect for the other person's intelligence and integrity and work ethic. And that's really, I think, what keeps our relationship working, our business relationship working. We each have also bring different strengths to the table. You know, Jennifer is really, really good at researching things and figuring things out for us. And I'm sure I bring something to the table too, but I'm more articulate about what she does well than I don't. And so that the complementary strengths and the respect for each other and being willing to, you know, take feedback from your partner is really important as well.
Sure. Sure. So do you guys, I imagine, have relationships outside of the work relationship with each other, right? I don't know if you guys are married, family, whatever.
Yep. We used to say, yep, we're married, just not to each other.
Okay. That's awesome. So when you told your spouses, hey, funny story, I'm going to go start a business. How do they react to that?
I'll have Mike start that one.
So I'm very fortunate, James, in that my wife knew ever since we've, you know, met that writing a book was my dream. So she was very supportive, and she works full time at one of the big banks in downtown Minneapolis. And so we were in a position where she supported my dream and encouraged me to do it and was able to continue to bring home money and help keep us afloat during those lean times.
Sure.
And Jennifer had a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah, I got divorced.
That has got to be the coolest answer I've ever heard with that question. I mean, I'm sorry that happened and all that jazz, but normally people are like, yeah, my husband or wife, they were just cool with it. And I'm like, there's no way that every single one is cool with it. So thank you. That's awesome.
No, that'd be, I am happy to take one for the team.
Yay, reality. This is the authentic part, so we're cool.
Yeah, this is the authentic part. And, of course, that wasn't the only reason we got divorced. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, this is a tough thing, right? Because, you know, when you are married and you go to chase a dream, when you quit your job, when you say, I'm going to put happiness over a paycheck.
Sure.
That's a strain. I mean, it's a strain on yourself. It's a strain on your own bank account, but it's a strain on the relationships in your life too. And like I said, there certainly were people who said to us either face to face or I'm sure behind closed doors, I think they're nuts. I think they're crazy. And, you know, I like a good challenge, and I needed to prove them wrong. And I think we did. So
sure.
Yeah, no regrets.
All right.
I mentioned the respect we have for each other, James, and, you know, Jennifer really showed a lot of bravery through all this time to go through that personal turmoil while we were trying to get a book published and get a business off the ground. And that's one of the reasons I have so much respect for her. That kind of thing would have made a lesser person really struggle. And she just, you know, just stuck with it and fought her way through it. And I have a lot of respect for her for that.
Oh, sure. Wasn't that nice?
That's totally. This is the authentic part. This is awesome. So I can imagine when you're writing a book, starting this business and going through a divorce, I can imagine there'd be some challenges there, or some like, what am I doing kind of thing. But in the end, it all worked out. So that's he lost.
Well, thank you for that. Yes, I think so, too. But, you know, it's again, there's no right time to go pursue your dream. There's no right time, I think, to say I'm going to take a risk or a calculated risk with my career. I think that's, you know, everybody has to just make that decision for yourself. And, you know, I think we all just have those moments where you think I'm at a crossroads here and I'm going to zig right instead of zagging left. And I think I owe it to myself to see what happens. So like I said, I have no regrets.
No, that's awesome. I had one of the best pieces of advice or statements that I've ever heard a business owner say. He says, life is all about choices. And he's got that as an answer to just about everything for why did you do this? Why did you do that? It's kind of interesting. And, you know, it sounds like, Jennifer, that you've really grabbed life by the horn, so to speak, and made some choices that were probably tough at the time, but they resulted in something. You've accomplished a lot of stuff. So that's super cool.
Well, thank you for that. And yeah, I totally agree. It's sometimes it's, you know, you can't always see, am I making a right decision or a bad decision? It's just about making a decision.
That's fair. That's fair. It's interesting you say that because I always joke that in the Midwest, we can't make a decision or it takes us about 20 years longer than anyone else. So I try to do business with people on the East Coast that can actually make a decision. That's maybe that's just me. Doesn't matter. So what is next for you guys? You got this business, you got a book that you're kicking around, getting some ideas. Like what's the next thing? Where do you see yourself in a few years?
Well, hopefully we are, in a few years, we should be close to having another book out into the market. So, that's kind of exciting to think about. We'll be in the next few months, we'll be continuing to talk about, our current books. And I think, you know, we're going to continue to develop our business and try and get our names out there even more and develop a longer lead and longer pipeline of new business as well. So we've certainly got our hands full for the next few years, and it's exciting to, you know, maybe it's because spring is in the air, but it's kind of an exciting time to think about what the future holds.
With the winter that we have had, I believe that we're only going up with the spring. So definitely cool there. So the last real question that I have for you is, what advice would you give to a person that was considering either writing a book or starting a business? Either or both.
Wow. You know, I would say my advice is the both. It is similar for both things, whether you're writing a book or you're starting a business. I personally, of course, would say find a co-author or a business partner that you can do this with, because you shouldn't do this alone.
Sure.
But if that is not an option for you, find somebody that you trust that can be your sounding board. Find somebody who, a mentor, a therapist, a third party, you know, somebody, a former boss maybe, who can be that sounding board for you, because it's really easy to either fill yourself with too much confidence or a lot of self-doubt and to get too far in your own head and to not make things happen, again, not make decisions, not move things forward. And I really think that you need somebody that you can sit across the table from and say, here's what I'm struggling with, and have somebody give you advice and nudge you in the right direction through the process. So just don't do it alone.
Sure, sure. Michael, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think I would say be really clear on your vision. Whether you're writing a book or starting a business, be really clear about what it is you're trying to accomplish. But at the same time, be really flexible on how you get there. Rarely is it a linear process where everything unfolds exactly as you thought it was going to. So stick to that vision, be clear about what it is so you can stick to it and keep going toward it. But you might have to take a little bit of a circular path to get there. It's not going to be a straight line, but it's sort of those curves that make it interesting and that give you those experiences to fall back on.
Awesome. Awesome. That is rock solid advice. I love it. So Jennifer and Michael, how about you tell us where we can find the books that you have, Operation Clusterpuck and BS Incorporated?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So, you know, the easiest thing to do is to go to our book website, which is rockandvossbooks.com. And from there, you can find links to everywhere that you can discover our books, either the electronic or the paperback copies. And we are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all those fine sites as well.
Sure. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. This has been a blast.
Thanks for having us, James. It was a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And, of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Jennifer Jennifer Rock and Michael Voss, authors of Operation Clusterpuck, a BS Incorporated novel. Jennifer and Michael, thank you so much for being on the air. I'm just going to do everything I can to get all the listeners to check out your book, because you guys did such a good job with those.
Thank you so much.
Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome, and if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.